Today's guest on the podcast isn't a six-string guitar slinger, although he's in the possession of quite an impressive six-string bass. Bass player Nathan East is my guest as we talk about the legendary Eric Clapton MTV Unplugged album. Because I'm paying tribute to this album in theaters throughout Holland in the fall of 22 and 23, I'm trying to talk to as many people that were directly involved in the recording of the most legendary live album of all times. Earlier on, I've talked to Clapton's wingman, Andy Fairweather Lowe.
When it comes to the solo and I go like that, and the harmonica flies out.
And the amazing piano player, Chuck Lavelle. Oh,
this is Eric Clapton calling from Hong Kong for Chuck Lavelle to see if he might be interested in playing some shows at the Royal Albert Hall.
If you want to see those interviews, be sure to stick around till the end because I will link to the playlist with those interviews. Nathan East, man, I don't know where to start. This man has played in all the great records you know, played with all the great musicians you know, to name a few. Michael Jackson, Beyonce, Stevie Wonder, Eric Clapton, Peter Gabriel, Whitney Houston, George Harrison, Ringo Starr, Phil Collins, Toto, Daft Punk, Herbie Hancock, and that's not even all of them. If you like the podcast, please consider hitting that like and subscribe button. It will help me out a lot. Okay, without any further ado, let's go. Mr. Nathan East, welcome to the podcast. Before we dive into the Eric Clapton Unplugged album, people will most definitely know you as one of the most recorded bass players in pop history, but you're also a great songwriter. And in my humble opinion, you're the co-writer of one of the greatest songs ever written to open a radio show with. I'm talking about Easy Lover. Can you tell me about the session when you wrote that song with Phil Collins and Philip Bailey?
Oh man, you know, I love it when a song comes like that, you know, because it, literally we were almost finished with the album. We had recorded for about 2 weeks and maybe second to the last day, Philip was expressing, he said, well, it'd be great to have something that could be an identifiable single, something the record company would go with right away, you know, and I remember just going over to the piano at the Townhouse Studios and sat down there and just kind of wrote the intro and just started kind of playing the chords and then they started kind of joining in singing, and it literally in about 20 minutes the song was written. You know, most of the musical part and the lyrics, you know, came the next day.
Okay, the next day. So, but also very quick.
Very quick, yeah. I mean, it's amazing when it happens like that, and to see, you know, the way it's received. You know, that's you couldn't wish for more.
And was Phil Collins also like the link with meeting Eric Clapton?
He was. He introduced me to Eric while we were doing those sessions. We went out to Guildford, out about an hour outside of London, and he introduced me to Eric at a pub down the street from Eric's house.
And you've been playing with him ever since.
Man, it's amazing. You know, this is like the 40th year that we've been working together, which is
wow.
It's unbelievable.
40th year. I'm 43. It's like mind-boggling.
Yeah.
Yeah. I asked you on the podcast to talk about the legendary Unplugged album, the years leading up to the Unplugged album. It was I think it was a special time, right? Especially for Eric.
Yeah, a very special time. I mean, funny, in all the 40 years, it's been very special. You know, I remember the first time we worked with Eric in the studio on the Behind the Sun album, you know, and so he was meeting kind of all of us for the first time, and we were meeting him, you know, kind of working together. There's Jeff Beccaro and Steve Lukather and all these great musicians. Great Phil and Gaines, and we were all like little kids, you know, meeting one of our heroes. And we basically just, it was mutual respect and kind of love at first sight.
Yeah. And leading up to the Unplugged show, what can you remember and what about your thoughts on doing that show? Because at that time, early 92, Unplugged was like starting to become a big thing on MTV. What did you think about doing that show? Was it like a big deal back then, or was it just a gig?
No, it was a pretty kind of breakthrough moment. First of all, you know, nobody had ever just unplugged everything, you know, especially in an electric band, you know. So
yeah,
to play acoustically ended up being something kind of like we're looking up and saying, yeah, who does this, you know? So we didn't really know, but it was literally acoustic, that nothing was plugged in, and And so, you know, the bass I use is behind me there, you know.
And oh, yeah.
The acoustic bass here and the upright are instruments that I used for the actual show.
I remember the circus recording, which I first heard on the deluxe version of Unplugged.
Oh.
I was like, wow, what is that? Is that a guitar or is that... It almost, the guild bass you used,
right?
It almost sounds like an acoustic guitar lead sound, you know?
It's yeah.
Amazing playing and amazing sound.
Yeah, no, it was all very, I feel so fortunate because all these special moments have come, you know, where they're not so planned, but then next thing you know, they become sort of historic, you know, and then that was...
Yeah.
Certainly one of the projects, I mean, it only took an afternoon to make like a few hours and, you know, to turn around and sell like maybe almost 30 million albums was just incredible.
Yeah.
Just to see the response that the world had to this little project that we just went out to Bray Studios outside of London and did an afternoon of acoustic playing, you know, to have that kind of impact also lets me know too, that you don't have to hit anybody over the head with your ideas and your music. You know, it doesn't have to be piercing. They say, if you want to get someone's attention, whisper, you know, so this was sort of, you know, acoustically played and a very, you know, more gentle approach to a record that, you know, just sold so many copies and seemed to have touched so many people emotionally.
Yeah. And why do you think like this particular sound at that moment in time and the song choice, is that also like of influence on like the end result of selling almost 30 million albums?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of a lot of things, you know, I think it may have been one of the very first Unplugs that was going
yeah.
on, you know, and MTV was kind of just really getting rolling really good. And so you had a visual audience. And then the combination of songs, the sort of the sentiment, and of course, you know, the tribute to Connor with Tears in Heaven.
Hmm. Yeah, it touched the hearts of many.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Let's talk about the rehearsals leading up to the recording. I talked to Andy Fairweather-Lowe a couple of months ago, and he said that he and Eric came together 1 week before the band came together in Bray Studios, and they laid out like the roadmap for the show. And I was just thinking, nowadays, when you're in a rehearsal, you just lay down your iPhone, you make a quick recording, and you send it to the rest of the band
okay.
through WhatsApp or WeTransfer or whatever. But back in the days, that wasn't possible. So how did it go when you all came together and they had like this idea? How did it, were there sheets or how did the process go?
Excuse me.
Bless you.
Thank you. Yeah, I remember, you know, of course, yeah, no iPhones or anything like that. And so they were able to get together and sort of go over the roadmaps. Layla. Excuse me.
Well, bless you.
Thank you.
In Holland, we have a saying, if you sneeze three times tomorrow, it will be better weather.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's beautiful weather here. It's a little chilly, but yeah, just pardon
over
me.
Here, it's raining cats and dogs. So I hope you sneeze one more time, and then tomorrow I will have sunshine.
Yeah. So to have, you know, to walk in and say, here's an idea for Layla that's, you know, sort of the slower version, you know,
yeah.
It was all very exciting to kind of be the part of the beginning of innovation.
Yeah, and the first time they came with that idea, I think because everyone before that time knew that song, like it was up tempo and it was like here. And all of a sudden it's like, ba ba ba. We're like, guys, what is this? Or did you feel it immediately?
Yeah, you know, it's always nice to do a fresh take on something that you've been playing. And I thought, wow, what a great idea to just completely reimagine the song, you know, and now,
yeah.
You know, there's been a couple times actually that we played both versions in the concert.
Oh, serious?
Yes, over the years, you know, just very, maybe one or two times, but they both ended up in the concert.
I wish you did that last time in March when you were in Holland.
Yeah.
Talking about the rehearsals, it was a week, I think, you had.
Yes, yeah.
Was that enough? Or was it like, we need some extra time? Or
No, I think you get in there for a week, and then you go over everything, and at the end of each day, when you go back to your room or whatever, you have a chance to go over the music of the day. So by the time the end of the week came, you know, we all said, hey, ready? You want to go do this? Yeah, so let's bring the invited audience in a semicircle and let's do it.
Yeah, because that's also a question I had, because playing just totally unplugged, monitoring wise, it's quite a challenge.
Right.
And I think especially playing bass, you really, I know acoustic bass, it's not that it gives back a lot in a really loud environment.
No, it's kind of one of those things where you're relying on the, you know, the feel of it to cut through, and then everybody is, you know, have such great musicians that are all listening and able to react. You know, so like if you're playing, if you can't hear another instrument, that means obviously, you know, it's time to bring your, you know, like especially in the drum category, you know. So yeah. Everybody was really listening, and I think that's another thing that made the elements of that very special.
And your backing vocals on Unplugged, they are amazing too, because I always thought that the yeah, 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 yeah before the solo of Layla was Clapton singing that, but I just recently found out it was you.
Oh, man, yeah, you know what? You just, it comes from the heart, you know?
That album is full of like little pieces of, also in the audience, like little cheers and stuff. Yeah. I know that album so well from back to forth and back again. It's
no, I think that would be a fun album to be remixed in Atmos as well. You know, where you can have the sounds coming behind you. And,
do you know that there are plans for doing that? Maybe or
I haven't heard of any, but it just occurred to me when you were describing how you pick up on different things.
Yeah,
that would be probably a fun format to hear that record in.
It would have been a great thing to do last year, because last year it was 30 years anniversary.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think they remastered it. For sonically, but I think it would be fun to hear it in Atmos. I think it'd be a whole nother experience.
On YouTube, you can find a lot of rehearsal takes, and I really enjoy like looking at those rehearsal tapes, because there's like a recording of Layla. Right. It really has just not the vibe of the actual recording. And it's like the last 10% or the last 5% even, which really playing for a live audience does.
You know, that's the thing. Sometimes, even in the rehearsal, sometimes you may even get a better performance. It's always going to be different. Every time you play the same song, there's always going to be a different emotion and feeling. And I think that some of those outtakes are a lot of fun just to compare to once because you have the other one in your brain, you know, and how it made you feel, and then all of a sudden you hear a different approach. So that's always
and for
fun.
You, did you like play it different every time you did a take of a song?
We did fairly similar arrangements. You know, just it's always going to have a little bit of a variation, but. Once you get the structure down, you know, we adhere to that, and then within that it varies a little bit. You know, back in the early days of recording, you'd have a lot of, especially on some of the jazz albums, where you'd have different takes of the song, you know, so the same song would appear maybe two or three times on an album.
Yeah, but with a different
take arrangement. You get different solos and different
different
interpretations sometimes, you know, tempo is different, and all those little things, you know, make a big difference.
Because I think Eric never played it the same twice.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I've been playing the whole Unplugged album last fall in theaters throughout Holland. I cannot play the solo of Layla in any other way than it was recorded. Right. But normally I also improvise everything, but it's so imprinted in my musical memory.
Those become the notes that are like they're almost like the wheel, you know.
Exactly.
It's just interesting the way, you know, because for the person recording, it's just, this is what you came up with at the one time. You know, they say the most popular air drum fill is the In the Air Tonight, Phil Collins, you know, where and he, you know, he told me, he said, well, if I did another take, it would have been something different, you know. But that became like
can you imagine?
The world knew that, you know, you always see 25,000 people in the concert doing the same exact fill.
That's an amazing point of view, I think you have.
Yeah, well, the perspective is fun to see, you know. It goes from a, you know, one day of a person in the studio, a guy just kind of feeling going with his heart, you know.
Talking about wonderful musicians, I recently found out you played on Daft Punk's last album, which came out 10 years ago.
Wow. Too much. And it was, again, so much fun to do. And when you're in the studio, you have no way of knowing that something's going to resonate that deeply with the world. You know,
Like that Get Lucky song was really a big hit?
You know, I loved it. But in the studio, one good indication is when everybody's kind of dancing and while you're listening to the playback, that's kind of a good indication that it's a good song. But you never know what's gonna hit and what's not gonna take off. So to see that song again resonate around the world was just so much fun. I mean, I was in, you know, Holland, Germany, France, driving down, and you could hear it coming out of the taxis, coming out of apartments, you know, in Japan, and you know, got back home. It was amazing to hear the song, you know, just blasting all over the world.
Worldwide hit, that's something. Let's get back to the Unplugged album. The day of the recording, what do you remember of that day? What was the vibe like? Was it relaxed or a bit tense? Or
yeah, no, the vibe was very relaxed and chilled, you know, and the audience was sort of invited guests and family members and friends and, you know, a lot of people. So you were kind of looking out at, you know, friends, and it was like, okay, we went from rehearsing this all week to, okay, now bring people in to play it in front of them. You know, and it's always, you know, an exciting feel to kind of go public with the music. Yeah. And, you know, and get those reactions. And it's fun to listen to, because when you listen to the audience, you know, it's like I can hear, you know, when they were responding for the first time of hearing a song a different way. I mean, it was just fun to know, because everybody's familiar with Eric's music, you know, for years and years. So then when you come out with a different version of Layla or you know, introduce the music like that, it's just fun to see the reaction, you know, and they're very receptive to it.
For me, it was like a starting point, getting to know Eric's music, you know, and then you have like this whole back catalog to treasure hunt, maybe even.
Exactly. You know? Well, there's a lot of gems that you can find.
There are a lot of gems. Yeah. I'm still discovering. But yeah, for a lot of people, it was, for me, it's like Layla, the way it was performed on Unplugged. For me, that feels like the original version, you know?
Wow.
If you would have to pick one song, favorite song of that recording, what would it be?
Well,
sorry, Nathan, before you answer that question, we have to talk about the sponsor of this podcast, the Fellowship of Acoustics, the best guitar shop in the Netherlands that ships worldwide. And at the Fellowship of Acoustics, you can find premium acoustic guitars, but also electrics, classical guitars, amps, mandolins, banjos, and of course, bass guitars. What do you think of this very nice Bart bass guitar? A custom built bass built by Robin Bart. Amazing quality. And here you're thinking, what's in it for me, Struilaert? Well, I've got you covered. For you as a listener, I've got a special worldwide discount of 5% on everything in the shop. Just use the code GITAARMANNEN at the checkout. Okay, Nathan, sorry about the interruption. I asked you what your favorite song was, if you had to pick one.
I'd have to say Tears in Heaven really just, again, is one of those just songs that just seems to, you know, I remember recording that song. It played me, you know, I didn't play it, you know, so just of the emotional attachment to, you know, Connor and what the song was about, I think it just makes it a very, to this day, you know, very special song.
Yeah, it's a really strong song. I talked to Chuck Lavelle a couple of months ago also about the recording. Yeah, great guy.
Great guy.
Stories he has to tell.
Amazing.
Yeah. And he told me about Old Love, that the song wasn't on the official set list, but you had rehearsed it leading up to the concert, and that Eric ran out of songs. And that was the last one he played. And then, what do you remember about playing that song?
Well, again, it's nice to have you know, sort of be over prepared, because in that case we're okay, we need another song. Well, we got Old Love is ready, and again, it's a great song. I think he and Robert Cray wrote that, and I always thought to myself, man, what a very simple but beautiful song, you know. And to play it again, it plays itself. You know, as you're going through the changes, and then one of the always when you get to the guitar solo, it's just like buckle up because it's a beautiful moment.
And to think that it wasn't like well rehearsed, like because it wasn't on the set list officially, and this comes out, it's
yeah,
and also Chuck with the piano solo. To think that that song almost didn't make the cut.
Yeah, you hear a lot of those kind of stories. You know, Chuck is a wonderful musician and a fantastic, fantastic guy to hang with on the road too. Just so sweet, and as you know from speaking with him, and so again, you know, it felt like a family affair.
That also like adds up to the value of what you did, what you guys did at that moment in time.
Yeah, I think it does. You know, it does resonate again with people, and the stories and the camaraderie is something that I think people gravitate to.
You've done a lot of things. You played on countless records. When I look at Wikipedia, like, okay, who hasn't he played with? And on that ladder of all the things that you did, where would you put Unplugged?
Oh man, I'd put it very high up. You know, I mean, in the very, very top of the, you know, of the list of moments and favorite things. You know, when you're playing like Unplugged and you know the Easy Lover project with Philip Bailey, Phil Collins, Daft Punk, these kind of things, you know, they become very special because of the reception that they got, you know. And even Prince used to say, you know, you make the music, but then the audience tells you what, you know, whether it's going to be a success or not, and you have no control over that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to be involved with projects that resonate with the world like that is just very, very special, magical.
And how do you think back about the Lady in the Balcony session? Because that was also recorded at a very special moment in time, like in the midst of the pandemic still raging throughout Europe and the rest of the world. Did it come close to the Unplugged vibe for you?
It was, completely different because there was only one Lady in the Balcony, you know. To play with, literally, because. You know, whether it's 60 people, 200 people, 2,000, or 200,000, that always kind of has an effect on the energy that you get back. You know, so you know, by not being able to have an audience because of the lockdown, but to have the audience of Malia Clapton, very special, discerning ears, you know, that she knows the songs better than anybody. It made it very special, and I enjoyed every minute of that project. You know?
it was a crazy time. I'm very happy that we could leave it behind us for now.
Me too. Yeah. It was when that happened, all the touring got shut down, and you know, literally I had a completely booked summer, and then everything just started to, cancel, you know. So it was
how did you make it through that period? What did you do?
Well, first of all, it was a golden opportunity to be home with my family, you know. It's something that I never would have had all the touring continued. So to be able to get that close to my family and kids and wife was, to me, a blessing, you know. So I enjoyed every minute, and just to do things around the house that I don't have time to do normally. And to stop, smell the coffee, to stop and be able to, you know, enjoy breakfast, lunch, and dinner with my family. I thought this was a gift, you know.
Yeah. And are you glad that it's back to normal, or do you miss? Because I hear that sometimes now from other musicians, they miss a little bit the rest that we had during the lockdowns.
Yeah, you know, because then now once it cranked back up, you know, I haven't really stopped this year, and I haven't really even had a chance to just take a breath. You know, there's just so many things going on, and you're always preparing for the next, and which is sort of why we signed up for being musicians. That's what we signed up for. But there's a balance that I think that we need to have, and I think what that situation did is gave us a very clear view of how to try to maintain that balance.
Yeah, it gave us some insight we otherwise wouldn't have had.
Yeah, so
it also did a lot of things. Eric himself was a little bit like in the center of like this outrage. How did you look at that?
Yeah, I looked at that as a head scratcher. I didn't know, like, why all of a sudden are we, you know, is this such a divisive kind of energy going into something that I thought was, you know, and every person, you know, has an opportunity to make whatever choice they want about whatever they want to do, you know. And so I thought there were so many people chiming in, and next thing you know, it's like you put one item here in the middle of the room, and then you have people from all sides telling you, you know, why they like or why they don't like. It's almost like, you know, and that's why I love music, because it's a song, you know, you get there and okay, oh, I like this song. Oh, I like this song better or whatever. But it doesn't have the political attachment that for whatever reason this had.
Everything is so political nowadays.
Right. Yeah.
Let's get back to the music.
Yeah. I think bring back the music and you know, the politics, you know, they can occupy a space of their own, but the music is a very special gift, you know.
Yeah.
And a very special language that I think we all appreciate even more now.
Yeah. Talking about music and family, your son, he will be in Holland at the end of this month, touring with his band, The Cream of Clapton. I will put the dates on the screen now in the edit, so people can see where they can check him. But can you tell me something about his project?
Yes, and it's very exciting for me as a father to see him, you know. And this is basically his first tour, and they're having some great shows so far. But to have sort of the family connection with this music that he's had, you know, since he grew up, and to see him now being able to play the music is just very, very exciting. And I think they're doing well. I know different versions of the band, you know, Ginger Baker's son, Kofi Baker was part of the band for a while. And Glenn Johns, who's Eric's nephew. I mean, Glenn Johns, Will Johns.
I just
saw a video with Glenn, who's a wonderful producer. But Will Johns, you know, and the great talent, guitarist, singer, and it's very sweet to see them paying tribute to this music and Eric.
They're not like reenacting the songs, they're playing it with their own vibe, right?
That's exactly
the thing of it.
Yeah, and As a matter of fact, you know, we better watch out because they're bringing some nice nice new flavor to the songs, and they're doing all the classics, you know.
So definitely, people go out and watch the Cream of Clapton here in Hollywood.
And they have, I think, they put the dates up on the Cream of Clapton Band Facebook page too.
Ah, to end the podcast, do you have a tip for all the musicians, young and old, to like improve their playing, or even when they're stuck?
Well, one of the things that I always say is just do as much listening as possible. And for me, I still enjoy, you know, listening to all different genres of music, whether it's classical, hip hop, rock and roll, R&B, jazz, you know, country, western, you know, I mean, I enjoy it all. And go, you know, go back, go forward, and it just gives you sort of a wider frame of reference, you know, as you're making music, you know, to think, you know, oh, wonder what Stevie would have done here, you know, or you know, just borrowing from the favorites that, you know, and just now with YouTube and Spotify and all these places where you can access music, I think it's just fun to explore and go as deep as you can into the music. So just so that you get it inside of you, which makes, you know, then what you create and give back, it just has an effect on that as well.
Yeah. Great, great lesson. Thank you very much.
Right.
And also this conversation really inspired me. So I would like to thank you very much for your time.
It's a great pleasure. And thanks for your support and then for, you know, even putting these kind of things together. I think it helps further what we all do.
We have to keep telling the story.
No, thank you. Absolutely. You know, I think music makes the world go round. It's one of my go-to places when things get too crazy. You can always go there and the music will never let you down.
That's a great, great line to end the podcast with.
Okay, cheers. It's all the best.
Okay.
Perfect time, and my wife is just giving me a call right now.
That's great. Say hi to your wife. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for watching. If you like the podcast, please hit that like button and subscribe for more guitar-related content. And if you would like to see the other interviews I had with Andy Fairweather Lowe and Chuck Lavelle all about the Unplugged album, please click on this playlist. Also, it would mean the world to me if you would check out my own music. You can do so by clicking right here. Thank you very much. See you later.